Views expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of this station, staff, or management. The following pre-recorded program is sponsored by Tabes Tech, LLC. This is Pro Business Colorado with your host, Dave Tabor, on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Welcome to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on 710 KNUS. Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor is a show about spirit, the spirit of opportunity created by people who could be successful anywhere and choose to start and grow their businesses right here in Colorado. And it is different here in Colorado, whether it's having a business meeting during a bike ride or the special kind of collaboration that goes on here. I get jazzed talking with dynamic people, with interesting companies, and with subject matter experts who get that Colorado is special. All my guests are people who inspire me and who can inspire you and offer ideas to help us succeed in business. And today on the show, I'll be visiting with Ed Seelover, famous writer from the Denver Business Journal and book author, also most recently of Colorado Excursions with History, Hikes, and Hops. And Ed and I are going to be talking about business, about state politics, policy, all those kinds of things that impact Colorado companies. And we'll be joined first for the first couple of segments with Brad Lincoln, who's co-founder of Funkworks, a Fort Collins based award-winning craft brewer with successful taproom operations. Thanks to both of you for being here.
Glad you're having me on when Brad's on here.
Yeah, it's a great arrangement. And actually, I met Brad through my great sponsor, MicroStar Keg Logistics, and Eric is here joining us. I'm glad you're here, Eric, and he's waving in the back. So anyway, it's a nice, can I say threesome that we got going here? And it's all brought together by the harmony of craft beer. So thanks for joining us. And this show will be available via the Pro Business Colorado podcast on Monday. We've had some great shows in the past as well. They're all available via iTunes or straight from my website, proco360.com. Again, that's proco360.com. And if you'd like to advertise on the show, you can do that too. Send an email to me at radio@proco360.com. We'll get that worked out. So time to welcome Ed Seelover of the Denver Business Journal and Brad Lincoln, co-founder of Funkworks Craft Brewery and Tap Room. Glad you guys are here.
Thank you.
Here we go. And the best part about this interview today, and I realize some of you are listening on Sunday morning, but we've got beer. And so, Brad, thanks for bringing that. We're going to open that up here in a second. Somebody in the control booth pounding his fists. So now you can come in afterwards. So let's talk about Funkworks first. Explain a little bit about it. You're in Fort Collins. Tell us about Funkworks.
Yeah, we've been operational for about 6 years now. We just had our six-year anniversary in December. We started, Gordon Shuck, the other co-founder, and I met in brewing school, got out of brewing school, and started up there. We chose Fort Collins. I knew that we chose Colorado primarily because Gordon was not going to leave Colorado. Yeah. He was in Steamboat building bicycles with moots and decided to go to brewing school. And I had, you know, I guess my stuff was in Arizona, but I was living in Key West. Gordon called me up, said, "Hey, are you interested in doing a brewery on the Front Range?" I said, "Yes." So we came out and we picked cities, and Fort Collins was kind of the first city that we both chose. And I had really liked that when I had taken a couple car trips. So we started up Funkworks, and we knew we wanted to focus right away. We focused on Saison. There's a lot of breweries.
Which is what?
It's a Belgian style of beer. And it's a little, I mean, it's kind of straight a little bit these days, but our true Saison is a kind of a very dry beer with a little bit of a kind of spicy notes to it. But definitely in the Belgian kind of vein, not like a pale ale, not hop focused, but definitely a little bit of a hop.
Why would you choose Saison? Is it just because you guys like it, or is there a niche that you were exploring? You thought you could exploit a particular niche?
Well, I think that partially, and this is interesting now, because I think there were 7 breweries when we started up in Fort Collins, and there are now 21. We thought, well, if we're going to do something, we want to focus, and we are very attracted to Belgian beers. I drink Belgian beers and lager. I don't drink a lot of American stuff, and Gordon had won awards for his Saison, and so he's like, well, nobody's doing a really good Saison now. I think we can do this, and I thought, I think he's right. So that's why we chose that, and we've always kind of been focused. You know, we've done other Belgian beers. The beers I brought to you today are Raspberry Provincial, which is a more of a kettle sour. and Peachy King, which is one of our best-selling Saison from barrels.
Are you finding that, and by the way, I know you, Ed, you two met when you were writing your last book, right? Or one of your
yes,
books?
Yeah, that was the first time I had a chance to interview them. They were one of the newer breweries in my 2000 book, Mountain Brew, A Guide to Colorado's wow. Breweries. But that was not too long before you all won Small Brewery of the Year from the Great American Beer Festival, was it?
Yeah, I think it was that year.
I'm opening, while you two talk, I'm going to open this beer and we're going to try it because I'm interested in, And for those of you listening, you know, you're driving your cars, you shouldn't be drinking it anyway. So, but I'm going to try this. And can you help me understand, one of the things I wonder about is with so many microbreweries open, craft brewers and all that, I'm just going to ask you this question because I don't know a better way to do it. Sometimes when I like a beer or I don't like a beer, I think it's just me. Like, I like it or I don't like it. What's the difference between a beer I like and a beer I don't like versus a beer that is good and a beer that's not good?
I think that some of it could be the style. So if you're having two pale ales and you know that you like pale ales and the particular style and you just don't like one, there could be very, very much flaws in that. Fermentation flaws stick out very easily in my mind. And so that could be part of it. I think that with styles, you know, you definitely have to drink a bunch to figure out the styles that you enjoy. Like I said, I like Belgian stuff and lagers. And then it's just picking brands. And sometimes even there's some variation within brands too, where
I want to keep talking about that. And first, I just want to let our listeners know, if they've just joined us, the voice you just heard is Brad Lincoln, who's the co-founder of Funkworks, a Fort Collins-based award-winning craft brewer, also joined by Ed Sealover, famous writer from the Denver Business Journal, and your beat includes the craft beer industry. So together we're talking about this, and let's explore this notion of taste a little bit more, because I really, when I go into even a really nice craft brewer and I think that they make some beers well, is there any way I can tell as a consumer, you know, whether a beer is good or bad, or I just don't like that style?
I would think you can drink more of those styles. You might have to drink a little bit more.
Okay. The learning process.
And I think that you can train certainly for it, you know, train your palate. There's Cicerone programs and that kind of thing. But I don't know if you want to get that into it. I think for the most part, it's just about what you like. And I think that's what the most important thing is.
Well, and I'm enjoying this Raspberry Provincial. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah.
And it's got a bit of a tartness. Ed, you've drunk a lot of beer. What do you think?
Oh, no, this is a wonderful beer. It's a great example of the kettle sour, which is in some ways kind of the starter sours. I don't know if it's fair to say that. Mm. It's not going to rip your taste buds apart with its tartness, but it's going to let you know a little bit what beer is like when it really uses the yeast to go beyond its typical flavoring.
And as a guy building a business around beer, you know, it seems like the market is so saturated. We're almost out of time in this segment. When we come back, though, I want to talk about this whole notion of building a niche and targeting your market and all that kind of stuff. This is it's a challenge to me as I watch the beer market expand. It seems like almost every corner now is starting to have one. This is Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor. And we're going to come back and talk craft beer with Ed Sealover and Brad Lincoln.
News Talk 710, KNUS.
Pro Business Colorado with me, Dave Tabor, is a show featuring world-class entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose to be here in Colorado. Sign up at proco360.com for announcements of each week's guests, to suggest guests, and to find past shows featuring successful entrepreneurs and business experts, all whose souls are grounded here in Colorado. Again, that's proco360.com to sign up, proco360.com.
Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor, Sunday mornings at 8 on News Talk 710 KNUS.
You can get your IRA or 401k delivered to your home in the form of physical gold and silver coins. Augusta Precious Metals is the leader in home delivery gold IRAs. You get free shipping, free insurance, and no professional management fees. Call 855-858-5807 now for your free guide to Augusta Home Delivery Gold IRAs. Call Augusta Precious Metals at 855-858-5807. That's 855-858-5807. Trust Augusta.
Did you know that a dirty CPAP system can make you sick? If you knew what could be growing in your mask and hose, you might not sleep so well. But now, SoClean.com has released the world's first and only automated CPAP cleaner and sanitizer. It kills 99.9% of all CPAP germs, and it's completely hands-free. For a limited time, you can try SoClean risk-free for 30 days. Just call 1-800-700-1331.
SoClean changed the CPAP experience for the better. My health has improved. It's simple to use, and I'm not worried about infections.
SoClean destroys CPAP bacteria, viruses, and germs, and it eliminates the daily hassle of washing your system by hand. There's no water, chemicals, or disassembly. Just pop in your mask, close the lid, and presto! Your CPAP system is clean and fresh in minutes. Call SoClean.com to try it risk-free at home for 30 days. This is a limited-time offer. Only available by calling 1-800-700-1331. That's 1-800-700-1331.
We now return to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Welcome back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor. I'm currently visiting with Ed Seelever, writer from the Denver Business Journal, who also covers everything from state politics and state policy and business issues. Also, his beat includes craft brewers. So it's great that I'm also speaking with Brad Lincoln from Funkworks Brewery in Fort Collins. Before we continue that conversation, or we're going to, I want to really dig into the notion of how you find your niche, how you compete, and all that in this really blossoming marketplace. I want to first thank our sponsors, Community Banks of Colorado, and also MicroStar Keg Logistics, who actually introduced me to Brad Lincoln and Funkworks. And we'll probably talk a little later, too, about how a partner like that can help you grow and expand your business. But let's continue this conversation around niche and around, I mean, what I see as a quickly saturated or becoming saturated marketplace. So how do you think about that, Brad? And also Ed? Yeah,
I would say that you're correct in that. I think that it is becoming saturated. I don't think anybody really wants to admit it. But I think with finding our niche, you know, when we were being part of the Fort Collins beer scene from the start, which had incredibly good breweries to begin with, allowed us to focus. And that focus has kind of paid off as the years have gone by. As more people have started breweries, we are still able to compete with them because we built early on a brewery based on saisons and kettle sours that people were not particularly doing at that point.
I mean, do customers look? I mean, Ed, as you cover breweries and craft brewers, I mean, are you seeing that customers actually focus on a particular kind of beer and go to a brewery and are loyal to a craft brewer because of their focus?
I mean, very much so. I mean, there are some people I know who drink only India Pale Ales, the very hoppy beers. There's some people who really search out as many experimental sours as they can find. And I think if a brewery gets known for doing one thing particularly well, it actually helps them in that particular area. The people will know. If you're going to go up to Fort Collins, I mean, you used to be able to do a brewery tour where you just bopped around from brewery to brewery throughout the day. You can't do that anymore. Now you've really got to find your niche. And so if somebody says, I want to go up and just drink good Belgian-style beers, I mean, you're going to know to go to Funkworks as well as New Belgium, you know, and a couple other places. But yeah, I think it really helps elevate a brewery with that kind of niche. Now, I'm kind of curious, Brad, how did that work for you all when you expanded out of state? It's been a couple years now since you expanded out of state, correct? I mean, did it help to kind of go out with that specific a niche, going in saying, hey, we're the Saison guys that are coming into your state?
Yeah, it does, because we bolt on nicely to other distributors' portfolios. They're going to have a local brewery that does an IPA or a pale ale or a stout, but they don't necessarily have a local brewery that is doing a Saison or a kettle sour or barrel stuff.
Does that help you crack into the market then, where they say, we've already got these local guys, you say, yeah, but here's a place that you need help?
You got it. And so getting in from to the distributors and getting the attention of the distributors, because they're going to sell their friends local beers over there, you know,
exactly,
somebody coming from somewhere
else.
Well,
and you want them to in Fort Collins. You just don't
Absolutely.
Want them to in Casper, Wyoming or Chicago.
Yeah, you got it.
Wow. And what's it been like? I mean, have you seen people come in and really discover Saisons, or do you feel like you're attracting more of a crowd who is coming in specifically because you're the Saison guys now?
I think that early on, it was a lot of people coming in, and they would say, do you have an IPA? And then we would have to introduce them and convert them over to our styles of beer. Nowadays, I think people are picking us out mostly based on our name, not even totally because of the fact of Saisons or kettle sours or whatever. They just have heard positive things about us, and they know that they need to kind of see us on the Fort Collins Brew Tour.
And for those who might be listening and may not understand the name Funkworks, explain the funk part of this and how that works into what you actually do.
Yeah, so Funkworks, and there's a couple stories on the Funkworks name, but the real story that I will tell you now is Gordon and I, when we were coming up with a business plan, we didn't want the certain things in the name. We didn't even want the word brewery in the name. We didn't have We didn't want any dogs or animals or our last names or any geographic kind of features or anything like that. So Gordon was like, well, what do we want? And I kind of like the way that industry sounded. And Gordon's like, I think that sounds awful. and thankfully he did. He puts me straight. And he's like, how about works? And then we started putting words in front of works. And funk stuck. And funk fit with us because of some of the Brett stuff that we wanted to do. Brettanomyces, kind of considered a wild yeast. And our Saison was also a little bit funky, a little bit more different than kind of a standard clean lager beer. So we built the name from that.
And Funk Works, spelled with the W-E-R-K-S. Is that something referenced to Germany?
Yeah, it was. So as part of our brewing school, we were over in Germany, and we saw that and were attracted to it.
Got it. Hey, if you've just joined us, this is Dave Tabor on Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor, speaking with Brad Lincoln of Funk Works Brewery, also with Ed Sealever, who is with the Denver Business Journal, and part of Ed's beat, probably his favorite part, is the craft brewing industry. And we've been here talking beer and drinking beer, Raspberry Provincial, which is really quite delicious. Thanks for bringing it.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about this notion of how big you can be and be a craft brewer. You know, Sam Adams went through the thing where, you know, they were the world's first big recognized what's now called craft brewer. And now people don't think of them, at least I think people don't think of them so much as a craft brewer. They're just so big.
In fact, I'll jump in and say the definition of a craft brewery as put out by the Brewers Association, which is the industry group, changed. It used to be you could make no more than 2 million barrels of beer a year, and it changed when Sam Adams went over 2 million barrels of beer a year. It is now a maximum of 6 million barrels of beer a year.
I wonder who writes big checks to that association.
Well, it's also hard to not define Sam Adams in many people's eyes as a craft brewery.
Really?
They were the originator. It would be like saying, Elvis isn't really rock under today's standards, but he was when it started.
You know, that's interesting because now there was an article you wrote, Ed, about New Belgium becoming a national. Now they're in all 50 states. And, you know, someone like Funkworks or many of the other craft brewers that are considered more local – would say, well, we're local, we're craftier, we're whatever the case, right? So how do you compare yourself then, Brad, when you're looking at, I mean, you must consider New Belgium like a big guy, a big player.
I do, but the other thing is, since they're right in my backyard and I know those brewers and, you know, I have so much interaction with them, I still see they have very much that kind of craft feeling. Mm. So even though they're in 50 states, I don't really make a big distinction between them and us. I mean, certainly they're much larger than us.
Yeah.
But other than that, it really seems like a size. And they've also been very helpful to us. And I think that's something that's a positive, too. In those early years, they've put our beers through their taste panel. They've helped us when we've had, you know, any fermentation issues and these types of things. So I think it's, you know, craft is very hard to define and becomes more difficult to define. But certainly one of the things that I think is very important when it came to craft was kind of that bond. And we certainly still have that bond.
That's kind of an interesting note that you bring up. And Ed, you've seen it too, that in that industry, and Eric, who's joining us in the room from MicroStar, I mean, it's a real collegial, collaborative business, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it certainly has always seemed to be. In fact, I was just talking with somebody earlier today about the upcoming Collaboration Fest, which is a really unique festival in March where breweries get together and work together on beers, and then they put them out to the public and sometimes, you know, sell them in their tap rooms as well. You're never going to see restaurants get together. You're never going to see, hey, here's the McDonald's Burger King collaboration
burger.
Well,
good, because that can only get worse.
But, I mean, it speaks to the cooperation in the industry. I mean, do you feel like even as we're cresting over 350 breweries in Colorado that you still see that collaboration?
Not as much as we did a few years ago, but it's still present. And I think that it's something we need to work towards.
I don't know how – I mean, my business sense says that at some point when the market becomes saturated enough with local craft beer and so that people are going to have to start – they're just naturally going to become sort of turf sensitive.
I agree with that. And it's a concern. I think we have to somewhat fight against that. And I think that's one of the things the larger breweries have done with us is over the years helping us out, you know, when we were coming up, and we need to do the same kind of thing to encourage that. Cause I don't want to lose that in craft beer.
Yeah. At some point though, right? I mean, anybody, you know, you can open a tap room, you can make your own beer and now you're a block or two blocks away from somebody else doing it. I think that the real challenge will be for a company like yours is how do you continue to differentiate in a way that's – do you think about those things?
I do, and I think that differentiation has always been one of our kind of key things. You know, how do we do that, especially going into other markets? So I'm less worried about that from our area. Plus, I think that it's going to be very difficult as time goes on to grow after a certain point because of what you're saying of that there is going to be, but you might still be able to be sustainable. But the breweries mm-hmm. that are going to mm-hmm. be to Odell's and New Belgium size yeah. probably do not exist. You know, they're not coming up today.
Yeah, it seems like the model may shift from starting out as a craft brewer, Ed, and you know, becoming like a New Belgium, and instead becoming a multi-outlet or something else. What do you see?
I mean, you see people going in a lot of different ways. We see breweries, craft breweries, that are opening up 2 to 3 tap rooms within a parameter of a city or the city in its suburbs. You see breweries like New Belgium, Oscar Blues, that are still going big and going nationwide. But I'm curious from your experience, I mean, what's harder these days? Is it harder to find more space on the shelves in retail stores, or is it harder to find more space in bars where even smaller breweries that aren't canning and bottling can get into?
You know, honestly, we have been growing even in this climate, so it's very difficult for me to tell. But it's hard; it's getting harder in both kind of areas. And I think with certainly the changes in grocery and convenience that are coming down the pipe, that it's going to be much more difficult to get onto shelves in future years for breweries that aren't of a certain size. Draft-wise, I think that for as much as like the beer bars might not necessarily be as excited about some of the things that we've been doing for a while or New Belgium's been doing for a while, but they still want, you know, the Peachy King or the other kind of rare beers that we have. And the other thing is the market has opened up a little bit where you now have a lot of the chains coming in and being interested in craft beer that weren't in a few years ago, and they want to be dealing with players and being able to kind of separate themselves from some of their other
competition. What kind of chains are you referring to?
Even things like Old Chicago, but Red Robin.
Oh, those, yeah, yeah, the ones that have multi-tap and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Is it hard? What's the process like if you wanted to get into one of those with your beer? What does that process look like? And by the way, I'm asking that question of Brad Lincoln, who's the co-founder of Funkworks in Fort Collins, and also with Ed Sealever of the Denver Business Journal, whose beat includes craft brewing. But back to the question. What is that like?
You know, each chain has kind of a little bit different of MO to kind of get in there. But usually it involves meeting with one of their buyers, you know, talking to them about their schedule for the year. You know, you have to be kind of planning things out. But one of the other big changes is that there's a big push for calories now. We have to get the calorie counts for beers on that are going to be on a regular basis. And so they have been asking us for that kind of thing. And so that's another kind of hurdle we've had to go over.
Wow. Have you heard of that?
Yes, it's part of FDA menu labeling rules that are supposed to go into effect in May. But I actually, it's funny, I just did an article where I talked to a lawyer who specifically deals with FDA regulations with corporate clients. And he says he thinks this is one of those areas that the Trump administration may push back on and either kick the due date farther down the line or just eliminate these regulations.
You know, it does, look, I get it for certain kinds of foods, but for beer, come on. I mean, people aren't really drinking beer for health conscious reasons, I wouldn't think. So anyway, if I get a vote, I'll vote against that.
All right.
So yeah. Now let's talk. We've got just a minute or so left in this segment. What's your plan for the future, and how much planning do you do around growth and, you know, typical business plan kind of stuff?
You know, we used to have, and the banks often require us to have 5 years of projections, but I only take about 2 years of those particularly seriously. We planned on being a 1,000 barrel a year brewery from a production standpoint, and this year we did 5,700.
Wow.
So we grew far faster, and that has its difficulties, than we ever planned. So I look at those early projections and kind of think they're crazy. That said, I just spent 2 weeks putting together projections for the next 2 years.
Well, yeah. I mean, where does that put you at 5,600 barrels? Where does that put you in the continuum of size?
I think last year, there's a big cut. So, you know, New Belgium is 1 million barrels. Odell's is about, I want to say 120. Oscar Blues is probably somewhere around 150. And then you jump down to kind of the mid-tiers, Dry Dock around 20. There's not a whole lot in between.
So are you considered a little bit of a larger?
We'd be more of a small to mid-sized kind of thing.
All right. Hey, this is Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor, speaking with Ed Sealever of the Denver Business Journal, also with Brad Lincoln of Funkworks. And we've been talking beer. We've been talking a little bit of news. We're going to move into news in the next segment, too, with Ed. And this is Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor. We'll be back after this.
CBS News Update, legal maneuvers coupled with protests.
Racist out!
Demonstrators in St. Louis, one of many marches around the country yesterday against the president's immigration order, 4 stays in 4 states, but all are temporary and limited to those immigrants who made it to the U.S. ACLU lawyer Lee Gallant.
We asked the judge to hold everything in place. We believe this executive order is clearly unlawful.
Victoria Roque of the Workers and Immigrants' Right Group, which is party to the case, says,
"We were very impressed with how quickly and swiftly the judgment was put down. This is a very urgent case. Still right now, Customs and Borders Patrol is resisting complying with the stay at airports throughout the country, and there are individuals in jeopardy of being returned home."
White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus says the 24 people are still being detained because of that immigration order. CBS News Update, I'm Gary Nunn.
Boy, it's going to be a fun week on the Dan Capitola Show. Starting Monday, we'll look ahead to Donald Trump naming his first Supreme Court nominee, Peyton Manning addressing the national GOP confab. Should Manning run for governor of Colorado? Would he win? At what other athletes, John Elway perhaps, should seek office here? That and much more action on the Monday Dan Capitola Show.
The Dan Capitola Show, weekday mornings from 9 to 11, right after Peter Boyles on News Talk 710. KNUS.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGdirect.com.
Do you have a family? Would you like to help make sure they'll be taken care of if anything were to happen to you? If you answered yes, you probably need life insurance. Now, do you think life insurance is expensive? If you answered yes to that too, you definitely need to give AIG Direct a call. We could find you a $250,000 policy for just $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-400-6213. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 70% on their term life insurance. See how affordably we can help you protect your family. Call AIG Direct now for your free quote. 1-800-400-6213. You could save up to 70%. That's 1-800-400-6213. 1-800-400-6213.
It's that time of year again. Bring the entire family down to this year's Colorado Garden and Home Show. Hi, everybody. It's Dave Logan. From February 4th through the 12th at the Colorado Convention Center, you'll be able to research, compare, and buy thousands of products and services from hundreds of companies for inside and outside your home. Stroll through an acre of beautiful gardens with 10,000 flowers in bloom. And don't miss the Denver Zoo Entry Garden. For more than 50 years, this event has been Colorado's largest one-stop home and garden marketplace. You'll find information, inspiration, expert presentations, and show-only specials to save big. And don't forget to register to win a $10,000 Woodley's furniture giveaway.
Bilko presents the Colorado Garden and Home Show, sponsored by Dish, February 4th through the 12th at the Colorado Convention Center. Discount tickets now on sale at Tickets West locations at all King Supers. Park at Sports Authority Field at Mile High, Lot C for just $5, and take the free show shuttle. Presented by Bilko and sponsored by Dish, in association with the Denver Post, 9 News, Colorado Garden Foundation, and TeamDaveLogan.com.
Welcome to Staples.
Staples guy, I've resolved to save my office money in 2017.
During Staples' January printing event, you can get up to $120 off a lightning-fast HP OfficeJet Pro printer. It can save time and money.
Oh, that kind of savings will impress the boss. Maybe this year he'll stop calling me new guy Nick.
Well, there are worse nicknames.
I've worked there 6 years, and my name's Doug.
Resolve to save during Staples' January printing event with up to $120 off HP OfficeJet Pro printers. Staples, make more happen.
Ends 1/28/17. See store or staples.com for details. Restrictions may apply.
Now, back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Welcome back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on 710 KNUS. Currently visiting with Ed Seelever, who's a writer with the Denver Business Journal. He covers all kinds of state policy issues that impact business. And Ed and I are going to talk about policy in a little bit. But he also covers the craft brewing industry. So I'm glad he's here today with my other guest, Brad Lincoln of Funkworks Brewery in Fort Collins. Thanks again, guys, for being here today. Let's keep talking beer for a little while, and because I got a couple of questions, but I want to first thank our great sponsors, MicroStar Keg Logistics. Thanks. In fact, they introduced me to Funkworks and helped us arrange to be together today. So, right, Brad? That's why we're here. And I also want to thank Community Banks of Colorado for their great support. Both of these companies, actually, support Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor, because they're really great supporters of the entrepreneurial community of Colorado. So again, thanks to them. Hey, if you want to advertise on the show, you have a chance to do that. Just shoot me an email at radio@proco360.com. Again, radio@proco360.com. We'll figure that out. And let's continue our conversation about the microbrew, craft brewing. Is there a difference between, Brad, between microbrew, the term microbrewery, and craft brewery?
I think it's switched over really to craft brewery at this point in time, as you know, the sizes of breweries grew, that the micro name kind of did not fit as well.
Got it. So let's talk just a little bit more about how you started this. You must have, you told me you had a partner, you told us, and that you decided to start this brewery focused on Saison beers. And but what happened after? What happened after that? Were you, did you just start? You must have raised money. You must have somehow.
You know, we, both Gordon and I were coming, formerly I was a CPA. So I had business experience before. Gordon, as I said, was, you know, working at Moods Bicycles. He was an electrical engineer before. So we actually self-funded everything to start with. Kind of drained our retirements and put it into it and risked everything. So that's kind of where we got our funding. And then, you know, originally banks would not lend to us because they were looking at it and saying, well, you don't have any, you know, income coming in, and we're like, well, we're going to, and we have all of these assets, but they didn't believe us, which I understand. So it wasn't, we didn't have really kind of any bank debt until about maybe 2 years in.
Wow. What does it cost to start a craft brewery?
I think it costs more today than it did when we did it. We were in kind of the downturn. So I remember we bought a forklift for, I want to say $2,600 that, you know, we used up until recently that I just sold for about $1,600 without a seat.
Wow.
You know, it's one of these things where we lucked out, but I think it was somewhere around $400,000.
Wow. When we first started up. I mean, that's a big risk.
Yeah.
I mean, you drained everything and you just
drained everything.
Yep.
Wow.
Ed, is that the kind of story you're seeing in others?
Tons. I mean, a lot of people do that. And I mean, I've heard of people going in with as little as $100,000. But you know, a lot of people, when they start breweries, they do it as a side job. They are still so dependent on revenue coming in from their main jobs that they open them on Friday, Saturday, Sundays, and they really try to stay with that. You all sound like you went all in from the beginning.
We went all in.
Wow. And that's because you'd both gone to school to learn how to do this?
Yeah, we both went to brewing school. And Gordon, you know, at that point in time, there weren't a lot of jobs for brewers. And he was like, they were very horribly paid. It's kind of funny because it's turned over the past few years. And I got out of brewing school and realized I'm not a brewer. You know, I'm much more of a business guy. I can do sales. I can do those types of things. And so I figured I wouldn't do well in kind of a brewery setting. So when he called me up, it was kind of a natural fit for us.
Well, and, you know, we always hear about partnerships and you know, I hear about them a lot in the brewing industry, more so than in other kinds of companies. Do you think that's, again, because of the mindset of the guys, the men and women that go into brewing?
Could be. I really don't know. I think that I've seen a lot of partnerships too. It could be just about raising capital, and there's so much work to do as well.
I suppose. So in the bit of time we have left, what kind of mistakes did you make along the way?
You know, we made a tremendous amount of mistakes. I think that we got a lot of the things right. The most important things being focus, making sure that we were reasonably well capitalized, being in kind of the right place at the right time, which is just luck. But, you know, I think that originally I didn't want to have a tap room, which turned out to be our biggest revenue center. You know, originally I wanted to just do bottles, and we wanted to do just 750s and not small bottles. We learned a lot as we kind of went. You know, even dealing with employees was something very difficult. I mean, I had managed people for years, but it's very different managing them in a corporate environment than when you're managing them and they become your friends because they're starting up with you, you know? I feel like we learned every lesson the hard way. You know, and 6 years in, I think we're doing well now in spite of all of that.
Boy, Ed, is that a typical story that you hear?
Oh, yeah. I mean, everyone's got the things they stumble on. The one thing you didn't mention is that you didn't run into problems with locating or tearing down a wall or finding out that you don't fit into the zoning codes like I hear a lot of breweries experiencing.
Yeah, we lucked out because we got Fort Collins Brewery. When they moved down the road, we got their old space.
Oh,
and so we moved
zoned
right in, and it had been a brewery for, I think, 20 years at that point in time, 25 years. And so the only thing we had to do was put in some more sinks, and we moved right in.
Wow. You had an advantage – partial advantage in that you had the capital, personal capital to invest. Of course, that's a disadvantage too, because that means you're, whatever you lose is personal.
Yes.
So, but that's what bankers want to see anyway. But what a great story, a great beer. Thanks for sharing it. I've been drinking it as we spoke, as we've been talking. I know Ed has. We've had a good time talking with Brad Lincoln of Funkworks. Thanks for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're going to continue the conversation. I'm going to shift gears a little bit, and Ed and I are going to do the talking now because the state legislative session's going on. There's lots of news going on in the business community, and I want to talk about some of those things. Right, Ed?
Absolutely, yeah. There's no shortage of things going on.
There's not, and let's make a little bit of a soft transition. Rather than jumping right into state politics, let's talk about a couple of the articles that you've written. There were some news that you wrote about in the restaurant industry, and that had to do with this notion that more and more restaurants are opening up that are featuring steak. And how, what are you seeing in that? It's, to me, that's quite interesting.
It really is, especially because Denver used to be known as a steak and potatoes town and used to have a, kind of a bland reputation for its restaurants as well. And as it's grown and evolved, and we're talking about 240 restaurants a year opening in the Denver area these days, you really see a lot of diversification of it, but you see more and more steakhouses in recent months either opening or announcing that they're going to be opening in the downtown area. And so it struck me as odd. Are we going back to this concept?
Yeah.
But the simple answer I talked to from both companies that are coming in and companies that have had steakhouses open for a couple of years has said, no, people look at the lines that are going out the door on these things. They look at the revenues that they're bringing in, and they just know that it works. Even in a town that's really going through a culinary revolution like Denver is going through right now. People love steakhouses because they're familiar. And so you see a lot of these new places, Urban Farmer, for example, which is going into the old McCormick and Schmick space in the Oxford Hotel later this year, or STK, which just opened up in the downtown area. And they're kind of presenting themselves as new urban steakhouses, and they have smaller portions on the menu, or they all talk about having bigger windows and not as dark a space, making it more female friendly, not the place you would just go to cut a business deal in shady backroom areas before. But universally, these things are doing well.
That's interesting to me too. I had a conversation with somebody from the restaurant business recently who was saying that, you know, protein oriented menus have terrible margins. So, you know, I mean, to serve a big steak, of course, I guess if you charge enough, it still works out.
Well, and the other, and Troy Gard, who runs Garden Grace Steakhouse downtown, told me this. I mean, steakhouses have two things going against them. One, they have meat, which is very expensive, not as high profit as a lot of other things you can serve, steak, meat. Particular. The second is that they typically have very large wine lists, and that causes a lot of capital expense up front and a lower margin than a lot of other things that you're going to pour as well.
I hadn't thought about that part either.
Yes.
And yet, are most of them making money in your observation and your car? Are most of them making decent living?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, not only that, but we wouldn't see all of these new steakhouses coming in if they didn't look at these other places and say, hey, wait, they're doing really well right now. I mean, we had a case last June where two steakhouse concepts, Cool River and Three Forks, opened in the same block because they were betting that much on Denver's appetite for this. And so, yeah, people are making money.
Is there an intersection happening with things like craft beer and some of these steakhouses? Are they trying to serve local products like that? Or is that just not of interest? They just want to do their thing.
No, very much. In fact, that's one of the things you see people mention, that not only are they sourcing locally, that they've got local farmers they're working on for both their meat and their produce, but they're serving local spirits and local beer more so than before.
Well, we're going to continue the conversation with Ed Seelever, the Denver Business Journal, on Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor right after this.
News Talk 710, KNUS.
Pro Business Colorado with me, Dave Tabor, is a show featuring world-class entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose to be here in Colorado. Sign up at proco360.com for announcements of each week's guests, to suggest guests, and to find past shows featuring successful entrepreneurs and business experts, all whose souls are grounded here in Colorado. Again, that's proco360.com to sign up, proco360.com.
Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor, Sunday mornings at 8 on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Hi, Hugh Hewitt here for ReliefFactor.com. I tell you every single day, and I'm telling you now, ReliefFactor.com has worked for thousands of people. I take it every morning, as does the fetching Mrs. Hewitt. Try ReliefFactor.com. Order the 3-week quick start for only $19.95. It's amazing what it has done for thousands. Watch their testimonials. Put down the over-the-counter. Pick up the blue and green bag. Go today to ReliefFactor.com. The quick start's only $19.95. $19.95. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com.
Man, oh man, am I excited to tell you about my favorite jewelry store, William Crow Jewelers. I had one of my father's old watches that I wanted to wear. William Crow fixed it up just right and for the right price. They've been in downtown Denver since 1924 and counting, a great family-run enterprise that treats its customers like you're part of the family. They're jewelry experts at design. You come in with an idea, they'll make it for you. Not by sending it out of the building, by doing the work themselves. Certified gemologists and a great sales staff who never work on a commission. Just go in and look around. You'll be stunned by the collections, including vintage and antique estate jewelry at fantastic prices. Nobody buys diamonds better and sells them to you for less. Family-owned since 1924, 16th and Champa in the historic University Building, validated parking right across the street. Give them a call, 303-592-1695, online at williamcrow.com. William Crow Jewelers, making Denver sparkle since 1924.
We now return to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on News Talk 710, KNUS.
Welcome back to Pro Business Colorado with Dave Tabor on 710 KNUS. Glad you joined us this morning. We've got one more segment left in the show, and I'm visiting with Ed Seelover, famous writer from the Denver Business Journal, who's also a book author, most recently of Colorado Excursions with History, Hikes, and Hops. So touring and drinking beer. And Ed and I are now, we're shifting gears. We're going to talk about some of the business issues facing Colorado companies and entrepreneurs. But in the earlier segments, we were joined by Brad Lincoln, who's co-founder of Funkworks, a Fort Collins-based award-winning craft brewer. And that was a lot of fun to talk about, too, because I know, Ed, that's one of your passions. And in fact, that's what's in your books.
Absolutely. So, I wish you would have stayed longer.
I know. So, you know, that's the limits of the show. And we're going to move on, though. We were talking about restaurants in the last segment and new restaurants coming. Let's talk about some of the growth that's happening in Colorado. You wrote about a company called eFolder and moving their headquarters to Colorado. What did you learn about them, and why do you think they're here?
Well, I think there wasn't a lot said about why they specifically moved here. I mean, yeah. They accepted state incentives, and the state tax incentive program has been very successful in helping to bring companies in that are expanding or relocating here. But what they are followed a couple of patterns that you see. For one, they're a tech industry company, and they're coming in to a state that is getting more and more known for having a large workforce of tech workers. And so companies feel a lot more comfortable coming here and knowing that they can find people, whether it be in that or the financial industry or the aerospace industry, where they can really scoop up people with experience if they're going to move here.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because for years, I think until the last couple of years, people wondered, can we get enough tech talent? And right. And now as more tech companies are coming here, I think you end up with this epicenter, this sort of gravitational mass that starts attracting more and more people. Is that what you're seeing?
Absolutely. And it's the whole point of having focus industries that both the state and the Metro Denver EDC go after. It allows them to say, look, come in here and we've got this group of workers that you can choose from. I mean, you see it. Governor Hickenlooper especially is pushing for building the state's cybersecurity sector right now. Really thinks it's a place we can take advantage of and be known as the American hub for cybersecurity. And the idea is all built around the more we have, the more people want to come here.
Well, and that's going to be an interesting, I think, kind of a heavy lift because talent in that industry is so tough. People who are talented in cybersecurity can really write their own ticket. And here we are as a state, we want to build that in Colorado Springs, which I think is awesome. And it'll just take a little while to develop. And I know they're working collaboratively through the sector and in higher ed to get that to happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and the key that you mentioned there is higher ed, because there is a limited number of cybersecurity experts out there and professionals. And the idea is that not only can we attract companies, but we can train the people to work for those companies.
Yeah. It is a challenge because unless higher ed really effectively collaborates with business, with industry, it's going to be hard for them to get those first year, those recent grads and get them put to work. So it's a real interesting collaboration that's happening. And I know you're going to put your kids into cybersecurity one day, right?
As long as it's paying well, I'm encouraging them to go there.
That's it. So let's talk about some of the other issues that you're seeing now, because one of the things when people think, and most business people are busy running their companies, so they're not spending a lot of time thinking about public policy. And when they do, especially this year, they're mostly thinking about federal policy, national policy, you know, what the new president's doing and all that kind of stuff. what I think people don't always understand is how much policy that's determined at the state level impacts their company, right? I mean,
absolutely.
Is that part of your message that has to be?
Well, I mean, the closer the government is to you, the more it's likely to impact your business and your personal life. So while we're having discussions at the federal level, and we've been talking about it the last couple of days, President Trump's, you know, 50 big infrastructure projects that he wants to put money into, for example, at the state level, we're talking about how to close a $9 billion gap between the needs we have in our transportation system and the money we have available to fund it. So that's not just the two or three sexy projects that are going to get big federal funding in Colorado. That's all kinds of projects from Interstate 25 and Interstate 70 to some of the rural highways that are lifelines to them to be able to attract industry down there. And that is priority number one for legislators on both sides of the aisle this year, is finding a way to put in front of the voters in November some sort of tax and or bonding initiative that's going to greatly increase the flow of revenue to transportation.
Yeah. Now, this is a business show, and so connect the dots. How are you seeing transportation funding impacting, say, a startup tech company, somebody that might not otherwise think that this really impacts them?
Well, I mean, first of all, if you can't get to where you're going, you're not going to want to be there. If we have consistently congested roads, and right now I-25 and especially a lot of the roads around the Denver area are consistently congested, that's going to make it less attractive for businesses. It's going to make people not want to be here. And so you're going to cut down the flow of commerce that way. You're also going to cut down the ability to transport goods between places. Colorado is putting a push to become more of an advanced manufacturing state. In order to do that, you have to be able to get the products you manufacture to market quickly. With bad roads, that doesn't work. And one more area I will say, and this may not affect everyone directly, but one of Colorado's biggest industries is tourism. And right now, if you've ever tried to go skiing on the weekends, it's miserable. And that is going to start hurting the state soon. You're going to start seeing people say, I'm sorry, I don't want to sit in three-hour traffic. I'll go to Utah. I'll go to California. Obviously not people who are just driving up to go to Vail or Breckenridge, but people who are choosing where to go to vacation. And mind you, the people who are flying into Colorado for the vacation spend a lot more here and are a lot more valuable to our economy.
Yeah, and we certainly don't want to discourage them through that sort of a painful experience. God, if you've just joined us, I'm speaking with Ed Seelever of the Denver Business Journal, talking about business issues in Colorado. And, you know, one of the things that sort of ties together with transportation in a kind of a weird way, but I think makes sense, is this notion of construction defects and not being able to build condominiums in Colorado. And so you end up with a lot of high tech talent that wants to be able to live where they can walk and because they don't want to drive, right? And yet we're not fulfilling the need for them to be able to buy a condo.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and condos, I mean, for those who have never owned it, and I'm one of those people who have never owned a condo, are often considered starter homes, especially for an urban crowd, especially for a city like Denver, where from 2011 to 2013, we attracted more millennials moving to the city than any city in America. And millennials aren't going to be coming in and looking and saying, I want the home in the suburbs right away, especially as they're putting off having children until later in their lives.
Well, they're focused on other things, and they don't want to deal with it, right?
Right, right. And businesses say, look, I need a place for my workers to live. And yes, they can live in apartments, but one, apartments are incredibly expensive. We're the highest rates between the coasts right now. And secondly, after a while, we've all gone through this, we want to stop paying rent and we want to start owning something. And if you can't buy a condo, it's harder to do that.
Especially people with means. I mean, these are people that are being well paid and they'd like to, I mean, all of their parents are telling them, buy something.
Right, right, exactly. Now, I mean, the biggest trick with construction defects reform is how do you do it in a way that that does not alienate, especially Democrats at state capital, who say, look, I do not want to bar people from being able to take grievances to court if they feel like their condos have been built badly. Yeah. I mean, right now, developers are saying, well, it's not building badly. Anybody who builds one is going to get sued.
But these are malicious. These are malicious lawsuits just being put in front of juries. They're not, there's not really a lot, and you're smiling. But,
well, I'm smiling just because I know you're coming from one side of the issue, and I hear both sides of the issue consistently. And the fact is most legislators have never been involved either as a plaintiff or defendant in a malicious lawsuit, and they're thinking about it in the big picture, which is the general rights to court of somebody.
Sure.
And that is really the sticking point right now in passing some major reform.
But we could agree, and I think both parties probably will agree this session to solve this problem.
They are both very committed to it. There is a bill that's been put out that would help with insurance costs. Business leaders say this is great, but it needs to be part of a bigger package. This in itself will not jumpstart the condo
industry.
Well,
I'm jumping on that, too, because I don't think it does. And we're not going to get into the specifics of it. But it is, I think it is an important issue that business people really do need to pay attention to. It really does impact your ability to attract talent and to operate efficiently in Colorado. So we need to get that solved, and I'd encourage everyone listening to contact their legislator to get that solved. Let's shift gears, talk about hotels.
Absolutely.
You're seeing lots of hotels being built, boutique, different style, different niche. What's your assessment of what's going on now in Colorado around that?
There will literally be thousands of rooms added in boutique hotels alone in downtown Denver.
Boutique meaning how many rooms? Well, how do you describe a boutique hotel?
Boutique hotel is essentially a hotel that's not the same corporate hotel you stayed in the 90s, where every room looks the same in every hotel in every place in America where you have one of those hotels. Boutiques can be part of a chain, but they're specifically set up to accent a local community and to help people discover that community more. For example, the first one that opened this year is the Hotel Indigo, which is right next to Union Station downtown, and that is a national brand, but they have a very Denver-centric workforce where when they interviewed people, they didn't just say, hey, can you clean rooms? Can you work as a porter? They said, we want your restaurant, your recommendations on favorite local restaurants and favorite local trips, because they're relying on the staff to suddenly be ambassadors to the city. That's the kind of things you're going to start seeing out of these boutique hotels. Each one is promising a unique experience, but they're trying to be a unique experience focused around people who are coming to Denver to see Denver. Mm.
And this is how they're, I expect, is part of their competing model, that they create a different experience for their guests.
Right, exactly. I mean, you have to differentiate yourself. I mean, 10 years ago in the city, especially if you were a luxury or near-luxury hotel, you could just say, hey, I'm near-luxury and I'm in Denver. Stay here.
Yeah.
Now there's so many of them that you have to say, here's what I offer that you don't. And many of them are offering both the kind of unique local angle and also saying, oh, by the way, I'm part of a large chain. So if you want your rewards points, you should stay here as well.
What do you think about that? Are customers wanting both? Do they want the unique feel? And does it hurt their authenticity to be able to say, here we're unique and you get points?
Not necessarily. You have to show that you are a little bit more authentic. And there are, mind you, some independent hotels that are strictly independent. The Halcyon in Cherry Creek is one that opened last year. That's just independent. It's not part of any greater chain. But they... if they can also offer perks that go along with the independence, then suddenly you have a leg up in trying to get those business or leisure travelers.
Do any of them have a loose collaboration of points, for example, where, yeah, you're nodding?
Yeah, there are. There are independent hotel associations. There are also what we call soft branding hotels. Hotels, for example, like the Brown Palace. Everyone thinks of the Brown Palace. It's just the Brown Palace. Mm-hmm. Actually, the Brown Palace is part of Marriott's Autograph collection. So you can stay at a very unique local hotel and, by the way, get the points to stay at the 8 jillion Marriott hotels that are across the country.
And those seem to be catching on pretty well. And quick, we've only got a few seconds to answer this, but are hotels adjusting to the minimum wage change now?
It's so early in the year that it's hard to tell, but I think you're going to see both hotels and restaurants try to go a little lower staffed or leave some openings in order to save the money that's going to the 99-cent hike they're going to be paying a lot of employees this year.
And obviously, they're going to have to try to do it very carefully because they don't want to change their customer experience.
Right. If you drop your customer service, it doesn't matter how low you're paying.
Yeah. Hey, thanks very much. Ed Sealover and I are about done today talking. He'll be back in another month or so. Ed joins me from the Denver Business Journal. We talk business issues and business news. And so also, Ed, if you'd like to check out Ed's book, I recommend Colorado Excursions with History, Hikes, and Hops, because Ed and I were talking about policy. But earlier, we were talking with our friend Brad Lincoln, co-founder of Funkworks, a Fort Collins-based award-winning craft brewer. So we talked earlier in this segment about that. So be sure to check out this show via podcast. It's going to be available tomorrow, actually. But you can also find this show and past shows at proco360.com. You can also go there to sign up for email notices about upcoming guests. Again, that's proco360.com. And I hope you'll, again, go there. Ed, thanks so much for being with me today. We enjoyed beer, too, while we were talking. And have a great Sunday. Check out the podcast again, www.proco360.com. Have a great day.